it is time for the hot topic of the hour. Body cam footage shows the moment Ryan Ruth was arrested on a Florida highway after opening fire at President Trump's West Palm Beach golf course. Ruth was spotted by a witness after taking off down I-95, where he was promptly taken into custody. He was charged with two federal gun charges in court yesterday. Cops said that he camped outside the golf course for up to 12 hours before the former president actually showed up and reportedly exploited a security breach around the course's perimeter, something that the New York Post says the Secret Service has known about for years. Authorities questioned if he acted alone.
Did he act alone? Did he have some kind of help?
At this point, we're still exploring that, investigating that. Our investigation will determine that. We do not have information that he's been acting with anyone else at present.
Meanwhile, President Biden says that he spoke to his predecessor, President Trump, about the shooting and said that when asked what's next for the Secret Service, he said this.
Do you have any more information on the assassination attempt?
I think they, thank God, the president's okay. I think we got a full report so far. We're down there tonight. But one thing I want to make clear, the service needs more help. And I think the Congress should respond to their needs if they, in fact, need more services.
Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, who would have thought that since the last time we did a show with you in this way, this week, there would be another assassination attempt against President Trump. It's shocking. And Bruce and I have been traveling, and I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to get a little personal today about some of the things that we've been doing. We were in Tupelo doing a taping for a special election show for American Family Association, the AFA Action. Then we went to Texas to be part of the J6 Film Festival, and it was amazing. I got 9 interviews, not the least of which was Ashley Babbitt's mother. I have so much to tell you and share with you, but that's we've been out of town doing that and trying to keep up from afar. So who would again, as I say, know that President Trump would be shot again? At the debate would happen while we're gone. There's just a lot to say and to catch up on. And so Bruce and I are going to do that today. You know you can reach us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. Leave a message, and we will use your message on the air. Maybe, mostly, we will. And also you can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media. Twitter is the place where I do the most. I'm mostly active. And you can listen to the podcast at AFR.net or any podcast platform. Well, just, I believe yesterday, as I'm talking to you now, ProPublica published an article attributing the death of a girl named Amber Nicole Thurman to Georgia's pro-life laws. But here's the thing. Thurman legally obtained, I'm reading from LifeSite News, Thurman legally obtained abortion pills in North Carolina to end the lives of her unborn twins. 5 days later, after returning to her native Georgia, she experienced a serious complication. Some of her baby's remains were still in the uterus, and she developed an infection. There were a lot of things that happened after that, but she ended up dying on the table while the doctors were trying to help her. The abortion pill is deadly. I don't know. I'm not an expert enough to know, or do I have stats on how many women are actually die from this. We don't have a lot of reporting on that. I know many are injured. A lot of times the baby's body parts are not, even in a regular abortion, are not all, they don't get them all. And an infection develops. It's very dangerous. It is. I keep telling you, the abortion pill is dangerous. There's two of them, one to kill the baby, one to deliver. And that's why we have to get to moms. We have to get to moms, and the way we can get to them the very, very best is to give them an ultrasound and let them see the baby. I wonder if this girl had seen her two twins, her little babies, in her womb, if she would have done what she did. And now we'll never know. The babies are gone, and so is she. It's tragic. If you would like to stop that, help stop that, and help the women, and help the babies, too, and just neutralize this whole notion that abortion is just fine, that because it's legal, it's moral. It's not true. It's just not true. If you want to provide an ultrasound for one of these moms who's just in a quandary, does not know what to do, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, today we're going to talk about a potpourri of things, a few surprises, and also just, again, some tales of our trip. But we're going to talk about the assassination attempt. We're also going to talk about the debate with Kamala Harris and President Trump. So sit back and relax. Stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
But the long and short of it is this. Coming out of Butler, I have ordered a paradigm shift. The Secret Service's protective methodologies work, and they are sound. And we saw that yesterday. But the way we are positioned right now in this dynamic threat environment, it has given me guidance to say, you know what? We need to look at what our protective methodology is. We need to get out of a reactive model and get to a readiness model. There could be another geopolitical event that could put the United States into a kinetic conflict or some other issue that may result in additional responsibilities and protectees of the United States Secret Service. And so we are working, we are making information available to all of our partners. And I just want to say that the commitment of Congress to the Secret Service throughout the years has been tremendous. And we will continue to work with them and Secretary Mayorkas, whose support in making sure that we're getting what we need has been phenomenal.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was the acting director of the Secret Service, Ronald Rowe. He did a press conference on Monday after the second attempted assassination by President Trump. By now, we're all familiar, I think, with the Butler, Pennsylvania near murder of President Trump, hitting his ear, three bullets coming so close. It's just amazing. And we're also kind of familiar with the Secret Service's failings on that day. Senator Josh Hawley released, ironically, a report on what the Secret Service's failings in protecting President Trump. He released it yesterday, and that's just like one day after that. I'm sure, you know, how would he know there was going to be a second one? So it kind of maps out the failures, a lot of them that we know, and I'm sure there'll be another report on this next assassination attempt. Bruce is with me because we want to talk together about this. Bruce, I guess I'm hearing contradictory things. I listened to a long interview with Sean Hannity with the businessman who was playing golf with President Trump on Sunday. And he talked about, you know, you should hear, he said, I'm blessed to have been there. He said, because my friend, he's speaking of Donald Trump, has such courage. He inspires me. Such character, such leadership. That's basically what he said. And then he went on to talk about how well the Secret Service did, how they acted so quickly and how they saw that rifle, you know, barrel coming through the fence. And he just had nothing but superlatives. He said they had President Trump, you know, completely protected within minutes of the first gun fire. The thing, Bruce, before we get to your response on that, did the shooter shoot or not? That's what I can't figure out. I hear yes and I hear no.
Well, there were conflicting reports as soon as this was announced as to whether or not Routh, the man accused of being on the aiming a rifle towards Donald Trump, had shot or not. I would say at this point the evidence is that Routh did not shoot, but that the shots that were heard on the property at the golf course were from the Secret Service towards Routh.
Okay, now we had the Secret Service acting director, Ron Rowe, just giving a press conference, and basically he's talking about what a great job the Secret Service did. They followed protocol, and I don't know what's true. Yeah. Did they do a good job or did they not? Can we know?
Well, I guess if you want to say that Donald Trump was not killed, that is success. I guess that then it was a success. But if you want to say that they did their job the way it's supposed to be done in the Secret Service, I would say absolutely not. You have a gunman who was right on the property fence line of Donald Trump's golf course for 12 hours at least.
12 hours.
Yeah. He set up a GoPro, which is one of these cameras that people use to record events, like hunters use them. He had rucksacks or backpacks hung up on the fence there with food, with ammo, and laid there apparently for a half a day and was not seen by anyone. Now, I would say that is not a successful mission done by the Secret Service. And look, I give them all the credit in the world. It sounds like Donald J. Trump's protection team that's with him did a very fine job of protecting him. The problem is, I don't think the Secret Service as an entity is protecting Donald Trump. You know, Roe, the acting director, I believe stated that they had counter snipers, counter surveillance, drones in the area. But if you look at this footage, I don't see any of that deployed. It may have been there, but it doesn't look like those assets were deployed. And a simple way to have seen this alleged assassin would have been to deploy heat-seeking or a drone with heat-seeking ability. That's what they do. They go up and they look for outlines of heat, which is a person's body. And had they deployed the drone properly, I think this person, Routh, would have been detected long before Donald Trump ever got on that golf course.
Well, it's a mystery, but we'll find out more about it maybe. I think there's an interesting story, Bruce, that you've told me before when it comes to the Secret Service. You pointed to a number of years ago, I think it was the head agent in Colorado,
yes.
A female,
mm-hmm.
Would tell people what she said. This is several years ago.
She was the head agent of the Denver United States Secret Service office. When Donald Trump was elected, her quote was, "I will not take a bullet for Donald Trump." Now think of that. She's the boss. What do you think her people thought after she made that statement? Probably many of them thought she was an idiot, but others probably thought, well, you know, if she's the boss and she won't take a bullet for him, why should I take a bullet for him?
You know, one thing that we are finding, yeah, so that shows you how corrupt, and that was a number of years ago. You know, I'm going to step out. Yeah, girls, you can write me if you want. I think the female agents, the female in the FBI and also in the Secret Service, the female everythings are the ones, for the most part, that are causing the disruption in corporations, these female CEOs they're putting in. Because I don't know what it is with, well, I guess it's the women that have risen to the top for elbowing and being bold, and not just bold, but aggressive. They're really mixing things up. My mother used to tell me, my mother was not... this is her simple way of saying it. She's very wise. She'd say, "Sandra Kay, when women are bad, they are worse than men." And I found that to be true. So I think women are causing a lot of this trouble. And we see that in the secret. Look, I'm saying this. You can write me. We see that in these the leadership. Of course, there's plenty of bad male leadership in the Secret Service and the FBI right now also.
Yeah, and I'll have to say that this new guy that took Director Cheadle's place, who was a female, now we have Ronald Rowe. I actually find this man maybe more contemptible than Director Cheadle.
Really?
I really do. You know, we have a second attempt on Donald Trump's life. And what is Rowe concerned about? Congratulating Secretary Mayorkas of the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and President Biden for their support. I heard very little about Donald Trump in that press conference that Rowe gave, other than he was never in danger, there was never a line of sight to the president. I mean, this is a man trying to save his job, and he's trying to butter up his leaders, and he's certainly not going to extend any kind of kind words towards Donald Trump. You know, it's amazing. Donald Trump is so effusive about the guys that protect him.
Yes, he is.
His own protection team.
Yes, he is.
And you know, this team has reached out to headquarters of Secret Service asking for additional resources. They have not been granted. Maybe some additional have. But even as of yesterday, you still get the mantra that Donald Trump is not the sitting president.
Yeah,
therefore,
yeah.
He does not get the kind of protection. And we have gone through this. That is not the policy that is supposed to be followed when you direct assets to protect a protectee. The response, the protection response, is supposed to be the degree of threat that is being made against this person. I can think of no one in this world, maybe, that has a higher threat level than Donald Trump right now. And if you don't believe it, we've had 2 assassination attempts in under 2 months. So for those of you who say this is made up, well, look at the proof in the pudding here.
Yeah, you know, I saw, by contrast, I saw a photo posted it's a video or a photo, but it's outside of Barack Obama, former President Barack Obama's golf course where he's playing, and it was showing that Secret Service was stopping every car, every single car, asking the people questions and checking the car, that even driving near it.
Right. Even the ones driving past the golf course, not trying to enter the course, but driving past, are stopped.
Yeah. So that, you know, doesn't hold water, that excuse he gave. Now, we think we need to talk about the shooter just for a second, Bruce, because we're learning a lot. Ryan Ruth, let me just say, this is perhaps I know there's been a lot of coverage of this, so some of this many of you will know, but some of it you might not know. He owned a roofing company in North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, and from all accounts, had a pretty normal family. He's a nice-looking guy. There's a lot of pictures of him in a suit, dressed up. He had 2 kids. I saw a picture of him and his wife and the 2 kids, and the account that I read seemed to portray a kind of a normal family life, as far as we know. He and his wife divorced in the early 2000s, and from what I was reading, I think the wheels came off the bus. I don't know if they were coming off the bus already in the house. Who knows? But now his kids seem to be kind of a mess. I saw his daughter, who just looked troubled. She looked very troubled to me. The son has really wild, long hair, and he kind of amusingly said he didn't know about what his dad did, but it was a good thing because he said, my dad hates Trump, and so do all of us. So that's all I know about that, whatever that means, besides the obvious. But Ruth was interviewed, strangely enough, by the New York Times, Newsweek magazine, and I believe CBS. I mean, not from this shooting. I mean, in the past, he's gotten a lot of attention, and part of it was going to Afghanistan, trying to recruit people from other countries to come in and fight Ukraine. Going to Ukraine and trying to recruit, I think it was Afghanis to come in and fight for the Ukrainians. So one has to say, well, how in the world did he connect with that world, and how did he get there? I know there's a lot of suspicion about if he has any other backing, and that's a legitimate question. I also think that he had quite a bit of money, from my understanding, from his company at some point. Now, he may have squandered it at all. How you can't work forever, not work forever, and run out of money. But he's a guy that is Bruce, you saw him on a video interviewed, and what were your thoughts about him?
I did. Well, he looked very strange. He's kind of wild-eyed, and he is really on a rant over helping Ukraine, which, you know, that's fine, except in the interviews of people from Ukraine, they said that when Routh was there, he was nothing but a bother, a hindrance. They didn't want any part of him. And so I think, you know, he's just one of these guys that's picked up. Listen, this to me is one of the big problems of what's going on here. There has been a systematic targeting, and I'll use the word targeting, of Donald Trump by the media, by our government, by NGOs, by domestic terror groups, by the Democratic Party, by rhinos. And you have to understand, they keep using this phrase that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. I will tell you that you, when you say things like that, you have to understand the type of people that can be hearing that comment. And a lot of them are deranged. And when you hear the words, as a former law enforcement officer, when I hear the word threat to democracy, I think back to our shooting policy from the FBI. Our shooting policy was, it is okay to shoot if there is a threat to life or threat of danger or threat of great, well, actually it's threat of great bodily harm or death being caused by someone. And when you keep saying Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy, that is the equivalent of what we were okay to shoot from.
That's a good point, Bruce, a very good point. And the other thing that we probably should remind people, you and I were talking about this in the car yesterday, they mainstreamed assassinating him a long time ago. There was a play in Central Park. Some of you may not remember it, but it was based on the Brutus betraying Caesar and the stabbings, but President Trump was dressed in a suit and they stabbed him over and over again in this play. And it was a big hit in New York City. Then we have Kathy Griffin holding up a severed head of Donald Trump with blood. That was something that she did. Then we have Johnny Depp saying, I think there was a time when an assassin killed a president. Maybe it's a time another actor does the same thing. Basically, that was his words. Mm-hmm. And then you had Madonna on the stage the week of right after the inauguration. You and I were there, and she's screaming, I've thought a lot about going to the White House and blowing it up. And then you have, actually, I could play. There's a whole montage of Joe Biden talking about violence. I like to take him behind the bar, and I'd like to knock him out. I'd like to,
all kinds of things. How many times did he say, we are going to prevent Donald Trump from becoming president again?
Yeah.
What do you think that means? How are you going to prevent somebody?
Well, my understanding is, I wish I had the exact words in front of me, but Joaquin Jeffers, just not long after the president was shot, made some comment, not apology, not like Joe Biden just did, but basically doubling down on what a threat President Trump is. And I think you're going to find others did that too, but I don't have
Kamala,
your quotes.
Yeah, Kamala Harris's spokesman was asked, are you going to change your rhetoric after this second attempt on Donald Trump's life? And he said, not at all. Not at all. And remember all that garbage they gave us after the first assassination attempt, the Democrats, about how they were going to, you know, tone down the rhetoric, ramp down the, you know, the craziness. They have done the exact opposite. And for them to act like this is, you know what this is? This is like blaming Donald. What they're doing is they're blaming Donald Trump for his own assassination attempt. They're saying it's his fault for his rhetoric. You know what? Some people may not like this, but in law, what you often heard is a girl would get raped and people would say, well, it's her fault. She wore that short skirt and that open blouse. What does she expect is going to happen? That's the equivalent of what they're saying about Donald Trump is he's a mean man and therefore he deserves this.
You know, I know that's it's a good point also, honey. And I know that's what a lot of Americans think about him. But his best friend on that golf course, you should have heard the tenderness with which he spoke about Donald Trump. And that's what we hear, that he's so kind. In fact, after his last shooting, one of the people closest to him in that moment said that he was so concerned about everyone around him, concerned about the staff, trying to help everyone in every way he could. So that's, you know, there's an incongruity here because, yes, he does tweet some mean things. Yes, he does. But you have to think about what he's been through. And he's the reason that he has, I think, developed such a hard an ability to survive all kinds of things in business and all kinds of things is that he has this like personal fortitude that he set, a personal wall that none of us can really relate to. But he does that. I'm not excusing anything that he does that's wrong. I'm not. I'm just trying to understand it. But he's actually in private a very tender person, more concerned with his... We saw how he acted after that first attempted shooting when they shot him in the ear. And he said, I thank God for that. And he was immediately worried about the people in the crowd. So that's just another point to be made. Well, there'll be a lot of things coming out about the shooter in the days to come, and we'll want to talk about that. We'll take a break, and just when we come back, we have some personal things to tell you, and then also we're going to say a few words about that debate. So don't go away. It's Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Amber Nicole Thurman, that's a name I want to remember because of the sadness related to her story. A girl from Georgia who went to North Carolina and got the abortion pill, and again, there are two of them. One kills the baby, one causes it to expel, because she was carrying twin babies. And she wanted to end their lives. She didn't want to be pregnant. So the process started, but the problem was they did not get all of the baby's parts out of her womb. She developed a terrible infection, ended up on the table with doctors trying to save her life, but they didn't manage. They did not manage. And so she died on that table. We have to stop this. Now, I know we don't know her, and she's responsible that she bought the abortion pill and took it. That's true. But there are a lot of girls out there who hear about this abortion pill and they just think, no big deal. I think a lot of people think that. Just take a pill and, you know, and it's over. It's not like that. It's dangerous. It kills the baby. And it can do terrible harm to the mother. You've just heard this story, which should illustrate it. So if you are as outraged and as hurt, really, as I am about this, then let's help preborn show these moms pictures of their babies in utero so that they will not make such a horrible decision. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When we talk about bringing down prices and making life more affordable for people. What are one or two specific things you have in mind for that?
Well, I'll start with this. I grew up a middle-class kid. My mother raised my sister and me. She worked very hard. She was able to finally save up enough money to buy our first house when I was a teenager. I grew up in a community of hardworking people, you know, construction workers and nurses and teachers. And I try to explain to some people who may not have had the same experience, you know, but a lot of people will relate to this. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood of folks who were very proud of their lawn, you know? And I was raised to believe and to know that all people deserve dignity. And that we as Americans have a beautiful character. You know, we have ambitions and aspirations and dreams, but not everyone necessarily has access to the resources that can help them fuel those dreams and ambitions. So when I talk about building an opportunity economy, it is very much with the mind of investing in the ambitions and aspirations and the incredible work ethic of the American people and creating opportunity for people, for example, to start a small business.
Okay. Well, if you listened to the debate last week, you probably heard her say many of the same things. If you watched that clip, that was on a Sunday show, you saw the kind of the deer in the headlights look, because she's just not good at interviews. That's why they won't let her do them, because she has things memorized and she cannot be spontaneous. But if you watched the debate, you heard a lot of things. You heard a lot of things that just absolutely weren't true. You heard her repeat things about Charlottesville. Well, actually, let's just jump in there, and I want to just trace a few things to set the record straight. This is just a portion of the debate where the moderators were helping Kamala. Oh, just a little bit. This is clip 14.
Nancy Pelosi was responsible. She didn't do her job.
The question was about you as president, not about former Speaker Pelosi, but I do want Vice President Harris to respond here.
I was at the Capitol on January 6th. I was the vice president-elect. I was also an acting senator. I was there. And on that day, the president of the United States incited a violent mob to attack our nation's capital, to desecrate our nation's capital. On that day, 140 law enforcement officers were injured, and some died. And understand, the former president has been indicted and impeached for exactly that reason. But this is not an isolated situation. Let's remember Charlottesville, where there was a mob of people carrying tiki torches, spewing anti-Semitic hate. And what did the president then at the time say? There were fine people on each side. Let's remember that when it came to the Proud Boys, a militia, the former president said, stand back and stand by. So for everyone watching who remembers what January 6th was, I say, we don't have to go back. Let's not go back. We're not going back. It's time to turn the page. And if that was a bridge too far for you, well, there is a place in our campaign for you to stand for country, to stand for our democracy, to stand for rule of law, and to end the chaos, and to end the approach that is about attacking the foundations of our democracy because you don't like the outcome. And be clear on that point. Donald Trump, the candidate, has said in this election there will be a bloodbath if this and the outcome of this election is not to his liking. Let's turn the page on this. Let's not go back. Let's chart a course for the future and not go backwards to the past.
Okay, so Sandy Rios back with you. Well, here's the thing. This reminds me of when I used to debate, I'll just pick on him, James Carville. James, it took me a while to get used to it, but he was not held to the truth. He didn't care about telling the truth. So the moderator would ask us about some subject, and I would say something, and then James would return, or he would be first, and he would tell a string of lies. I knew the answer, the refutation for each of one of those, but you can't, in a television interview or in a debate, spend all of your time refuting the lies of your opponent. So I'll tell you, it made me stumble the first few times I debated with him, because I thought, I can't, how can I counter all five of those things in one response? And President Trump was also in that position, because she just rattled off a bunch of things that were abject lies. And I actually want to kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about here. She said she was in the Capitol that day, like she was a victim. She was there. Actually, you know what? She wasn't. She left early. Oh, she might have been there for a minute or two to gavel it open. But then she went over to the DNC. Remember that bomb threat? The fake bomb at the DNC headquarters? Well, that's where she was. She was not in the Capitol, not some victim. She said that officers died. She said some officers died. That's an abject lie. One officer died the next day of a stroke. He did not die. In fact, we have a picture of him walking through the Capitol after they reported he died. Remember Brian Sicknick? They actually had this big, they made it immediately, said that he was killed by the J6ers. They had him lying in state in the rotunda. Remember that? But the truth was, he died of a stroke. He did not die on that day. He died the next day. And there's a lot more to that story. But that's a lie number, well, I don't know, three or four. And then she talks about Charlottesville, how President Trump, this is what Joe Biden repeats all the time, and so does she, that President Trump said that there were good people on both sides. And that's supposed to be a horrible thing. But I thought you might enjoy, actually, benefit.
Well, and I think we need to add that she always leaves out that immediately after President Trump did say there were good people on both sides, he said, but I denounce the white supremacists, the radical groups. He did that immediately, and that's never brought up.
And we actually have a full, you know, there's a clip of him talking. So that can't be refuted. That was just an abject lie. When Joe Biden says it, he's lying also. And then there in the debate, you might remember that President Trump talked about the Haitians eating people's pets in Ohio. Well, ironically, you know, of course, then David Muir jumped in and said that just wasn't true. They called the city council member, the head of the city government, and he said it wasn't true, just wasn't happening. Very helpfully, he corrected Donald Trump, only it wasn't correct. And so the irony is, I found a clip of Kamala talking about the Haitians coming into this country. This is just an aside to get a full picture of what's happening here. This is clip five.
Starting with our administration, we gave TPS, temporary protected status, to Haitian migrants, 55,000. And then more recently, we extended temporary protected status to over 100,000 Haitian migrants for that very reason, that they need support, they need protection.
Yeah, so that's not directly addressing they're eating our animals, but it's just amazing. I didn't realize that she was on tape saying proudly how they had brought 55,000 into the country. They put 20,000 in that little town. And ironically, Mike Rogers, who I'm not a fan of, he's a congressman from Ohio. He's terrible on, let's just say he votes in a terrible way. And he usually works with the military-industrial complex, and so people's eyebrows go up when he okays all of these millions of dollars of spending to the defense industry. I don't know what the truth is there. I'm not prepared to, you know, declare anything, but I would just say this is his district. Have you heard Mike Rogers say anything about what's going on in Ohio there? No, you haven't. Okay, but back to Kamala, because there were a lot of things. Well, for instance, she says she's for guns now. I just think you should hear, you know, Kamala on guns, because there were so many contradictions and so many lies in that debate. This is clip 10.
This business about taking everyone's guns away. Tim Walz and I are both gun owners. We're not taking anybody's guns away. So stop with the continuous lying about this stuff.
I support buybacks, and it's something I'm so passionate about and so looking forward to being president to address. We've got to deal with this.
How mandatory is your gun buyback program?
It's mandatory.
Stop with the continuous lying about this stuff.
I want to play a few more clips, because I do want you to understand we're facing something really awful, I believe, if we embrace Kamala Harris and her partner, Tim Walz. Some call him Jazz Hands. I think that's a good name for him, because he's so always fluttering about his face with his emotion. And it's just this strange, strange. I think this is strange. I just do. Kamala has claimed that I don't know if it was in this debate, but she claimed that she was not against private insurance. She's never been against private insurance. Well, let's see. Let's hear Kamala Harris on private insurance. This is clip four.
Just to follow up on that, and correct me if I'm wrong, to reiterate, you support the Medicare for All bill, I think initially co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders. You're also a co-sponsor on it. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it?
Well, listen, the idea is that everyone gets access to medical care. And you don't have to go through the process of going through an insurance company, having them give you approval, going through the paperwork, all of the delay that may require. Who of us has not had that situation where you got to wait for approval and the doctor says, well, I don't know if your insurance company is going to cover this? Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
Okay. So I think she is against private insurance. And, you know, that's a really, we could do a whole show on that, and perhaps we will. But I just wanted you to hear what she actually said on those things. Now, there's been a lot of talk, of course, about that debate with Lindsay Davis and David Muir on ABC not being, let's say, righteous, that there's a problem there. And so we have been told by Mark Penn, it was a former pollster for President Clinton, and I think Biden also. And he came out and said, there's something wrong in this debate. We need to do a full investigation. And I agree. I said to Bruce when we were listening that I think that she had all of those questions before, because she's not that eloquent, and she memorized answers, which her answer, she did a great job delivering her answers, which were filled with deceit and lies. It was just amazing. And, of course, the moderators were prepared to fact-check President Trump. They did. They embarrassed him. They jumped in. But they didn't do the same for Kamala Harris. We all saw that. Well, there was supposedly a whistleblower. I don't know if it's true or not. I have the documents. I have his sworn statement. It says, my name is blank. I reside in the address Manhattan, New York. I have worked for ABC News for over 10 years in various technical and administrative positions. For the record, I do not endorse Donald Trump in his capacity as candidate for president. The intent of this affidavit is to address concerns regarding perceived biases without news reporting within my employer's debate that will be hosted on September the 10th. Then he goes on and he talks about the things that he allegedly knows about what went on behind the scenes, and that there was some chicanery, and that she did have the questions beforehand and other things. But now I'm hearing that this may be fake. So, you know, what's happening? Some people are saying that we're being played. We're just being played. I think that does not mean that Kamala Harris didn't have the questions and that the debate moderators, it was a setup for Donald Trump. I think that's true. I think we all saw that. And so that's what happened while we were gone. Well, I want to talk about while we were gone. And Bruce, before we go on, I want people to know, this is kind of the personal part. Happy birthday, honey.
And happy birthday to you.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Well, we have a mutual birthday. Both our birthday is today.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. We when we first started dating, I mean like the second day after the first date, I saw you were paying for something and you asked me to read something. I'm not one to look at people's private information, but there it was, your birthday was September the 17th. I thought, that's my birthday. It was so, but it has grown into a lot of fun with us. It has now, honey.
It sure has. And, you know, it's like having two anniversaries, really, where we can share it rather than it being one-sided. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just been sweet. I never expected it to be as nice as it has been.
We've tried to make everyone special. Now, we kind of flunked the last several years because we've been so busy.
I was recounting 3 birthdays ago, I was at the dentist. 2 birthdays ago, we were traveling. And today, we're doing your show.
Yeah.
Not that this is heavy lifting or anything, but it's just kind of funny. It's not the way a lot of people spend their birthdays.
Before we married, how did you celebrate your birthday? Was that the norm?
Not that much. I mean, some, but.
I remember giving you a surprise party on your 50th before we got married.
That was a surprise, too. And I had begged you not to do anything. And all of a sudden, you got me over to this restaurant and everybody was there. And I must say, I was very wrong. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that was great. We had a lot of fun. And I guess for my birthday, before I married you, I was just having crazy times. I remember being in China or Thailand or someplace when I'd have a birthday, and I just didn't, I thought, this is great. Once I smuggled Bibles, I've told that story in my book. And I did that, I don't want to boast about that. Let me just say I tried to do something that I probably shouldn't have done, but I got the commentaries out. And because I said to myself, this is my birthday, this is my present to me, I'm going to get these through. So we've had different kinds of birthdays, but now we've had a way to celebrate it. We try to have some kind of do something for other people besides ourselves, and it's kind of cool. I enjoy it. But okay, Bruce, you and I have been gone. Today, you just got through driving 2,300 miles for these adventures we've been on for the last 10 days. So how are you feeling over there? Happy birthday.
No, I'm feeling pretty good. We got home last night, and now we've had 12 hours to recover, and I'm feeling pretty good, and I loved our trip. I thought this was one of the best trips we've ever taken. We got to go to American Family Association, and Sandy participated in an event there, and then we got to go to Texas and be at this First Amendment Film Festival, which concentrated on several areas, but the pandemic, J6,
the 2020 election.
The 2020 election, the upcoming election, and I learned so much from these people.
Yeah, I've been telling listeners about that J6 Film Festival for a while, and we're going to talk more about it because I did get 9 really incredible interviews, and one of them was with Mickey, who is Ashley Babbitt's mother. Ashley was the one person who did get shot and killed at that day. Then a lot of J6ers with their incredible stories. We talked to Dr. David Clements, who was a law professor and a former prosecutor, and he lost his job because of his stand, his opposition to COVID restrictions. And then he went into covering the 2020 election, so he's not popular anywhere he goes. He's chosen a hard path.
He really has. He is a very, very heroic man, I would say, because he has taken on the government from many things. Like you say, he took on his university regarding COVID, and they fired him. And, of course, as soon as they fired him, they got to the Bar Association in New Mexico and tried to have him disbarred.
Yeah.
He's taking on the government. He's representing several of the J6 people. He's a brilliant man. I can't wait till people get to see his movie.
Yeah.
Because it's wonderful.
Yeah.
He's also shown me. Look, we all had our thoughts about whether or not the 2020 election was rigged. I can tell you, after watching his movie, I am convinced, because he brought in computer experts who not only showed you the theory of what was done, but the actual results in different jurisdictions and how it was done, and why they stopped the counting when they did and what that accomplished. I'm telling you, if you have doubts, watch this movie.
Yes, and we'll talk about that when we do the interview when people hear the interview with him. Also, there was one on the American government, this government, being complicit with child sex trafficking. Now, I realize we all saw this movie, the movie most of us did.
Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom, which was excellent. But this is real footage, real people who are in the midst of it, and much more information than I was astounded and weeping at the end of this movie. And so, and this is the Biden administration. This is Mayorkas. This is Xavier Becerra. This is the complicity of this is just shocking. And it's another movie that we'll lead you to when we get to that interview. One last thing. I had the chance of meeting with a young man that I never saw coming. He's a leftist. He's an atheist. And he was doing photography work at the event. And he came to me and said, Sandy, I know you. I've followed you for years, and he did mean years, a lot of years. He talked about Media Watch, Right Wing Watch is the organization, one of them, that tracks people like me and plays excerpts and mocks us and makes fun. And I've been a star of Media Matters for a long time. but a right-wing watch, I think it is. Sorry, I'm getting my names mixed up. But he and I had a very long conversation, which we recorded. And we'll be playing that for you, too, as well. And that'll come in the days to come. So I just wanted you to know why we've kind of been out of the loop. Why, but yeah, because sometimes it's really a challenge to travel like that and gather all this stuff and then try to bring you information on a timely basis. So give us a little grace here as we're out trying to gather some of the best information we possibly can. And, sweetheart, thank you so much for doing the driving on that long, crazy trip.
I just carry the bags and drive the car. That's what I
no,
say.
No, you do a lot more than that. We actually got to dress up for a red carpet event. Yeah. You did a little mini tux and me and a, yeah. So we should post that on our media.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just one real quick note.
Okay.
I wanted to thank Adam because
yes.
We got to be with him in Tupelo. And, you know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes that help this show. Adam is probably number one, and he did a wonderful job, and he always does a wonderful job.
He's no doubt number one. Yeah. I don't know what staff we were talking about. We have one staffer, and that's Adam, and he does a great job. So, Adam, thank you. I'm so glad Bruce mentioned that. We are so grateful to you. He does a great job of putting these shows together. Well, okay, we're back, and coming up, you're going to hear a lot of these J6 related, but they're not all J6 interviews that we gathered along the way. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net or Adam. I think you should send your complaints to Adam. Sandy@afr.net. You can also go find us on social media. Again, Twitter is the place, @SandyRiosTweet, that I'm most active, post the most stuff. And you can find the podcast on any podcast platform. I want to thank our newest sponsor, Timothy Plan, where you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit TimothyPlan.com/Sandy. That's TimothyPlan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening today. Oh, by the way, honey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you for listening and joining us on our birthday on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.